Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
lights. With tonight's guest, yogi, entrepreneur, and growth coach, Rick Sugarman.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Essie Jane. I am Mark Leisure, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I have heard so many people say that life goes in cycles, and that is helpful. It's been helpful to me, indicating, for example, that we go around and around, like we've been here before, there's a loss, there's a success, and we just go around and come back to the same place, and that's good for some people. I have been playing around for a few years now with this idea that life goes in a spiral, and I like spirals, and I like to think that, at least for me, that my life is spiraling up. We've heard people say, I'm spiraling down, which I don't know if it works that way, but I'd like to think for me that it spirals up. And so that when I do invariably come to the place where there's loss or there's gain or benefit or whatever it is, that I've been there before, I'd like to think that I'm there with a completely different consciousness. And if we've been conscious about it, and if we have consciousness, then when we get to that place where we have a loss, for example, of some sort, whatever that is, or a lull, or our guest talks about it as a valley, and we'll talk about that in a moment. And I so resonated with that, and that's why I'm sharing. So when we get to this valley, let's say, to use our guest's word, then to be conscious of, oh, I've been here before, and as a matter of fact, I'll also say this, that even if there's a moment of gain, like who was it that said, this too shall pass, that, you know, whether or not, if we're having a bad day, this too shall pass, and we're having a good day, this too shall pass, in which case we could hopefully enjoy the good day more, because we know this is the moment to get to enjoy and learn from and experience and all that. So I have literally said to Dorothy and Mark and some of my family members and some of my closest friends, remind me that when I get to one of those valleys that I've been there before, and that I actually found benefit at times, and I actually, it served me, and that it doesn't last forever and all of that. So that I don't need reminder during the good times. I think I'm fairly conscious, but during those times, I might not be in the right presence of mind to remember, so that this can actually be a good thing. So our guest, Rick Sugarman, and we're going to be hearing him share about this, but there's one particular part in his book, Sustaining Change Through Valley. I'm going to read a little bit of it, and you'll hear a little bit of a rhyme, because it's kind of a children's book, but I think definitely written for adults. So here in the middle of the book, it says, valleys can feel like the beginning of the end, or even failures. Valleys are not failures. Valleys can be lovely parts of the journey. We all need breaks. Valleys are opportunities to rejuvenate or try something new. After all, valleys typically mean we're doing less of something. A setback might indicate a bad fit. When you hit a valley, don't beat yourself up. And so today's episode 855 of the Life Changes Show is titled Learning How to Embody Sustainable Change, which of course includes all of that. So with that, we are delighted to have our interview guest on this episode. He's a yogi entrepreneur. He's a growth coach. He's an author. He's so much more. I don't know if we'll get to all of it. In the meantime, though, we've got Rick Sugarman on the show. Welcome, Rick, to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you so much for that lovely introduction. I'm so excited to be here.
Thank you for that segment of the book. And actually, I can't wait to read the rest of that and where that goes. But technically, between that book and your other book, which is Sustaining Change, and that's about goal achievement and all that, your life, as you described it to me and as I got a sense of you, it feels like it's brought you here, and we'll talk more about this in a moment, to this place. Please tell me what you think I mean by that.
Sure. So I can remember back freshman year of college, I was the guy really wondering, what is the purpose of life? What is my purpose? And I had this deep sense that there was such potential within me. And I was fortunate. I grew up with great parents who loved me and didn't spoil, but as long as I was willing to commit and work hard, they would get me to hockey at 5:30. They would get me to Europe to compete in soccer if I earned my way there. And so that felt like a major advantage that for the last 20 years, I'm 42 now, for most of those 20 years, I felt like, you know, you're not living up to your potential. Your potential is greater. What is your purpose? What is your meaning? And 8 years ago, a fundamental transition happened where I went on a deep personal growth journey and started reading and reading and reading and started trying things and iterating. And slowly, very slowly, things started to work. And it was normally some sort of a variation on another strategy, but designed to fit into a very busy life. I was doing real estate investment at the time and working very long hours. And through that process, slowly what I found is I started stacking different behaviors. And these behaviors, to work for me, they had to actually create time. They couldn't take time. Mm. They had to make me more productive. And I had to like them. If I didn't, what I found is that if I don't like the behavior, then I'm not going to sustain it. The willpower, the discipline to perform my job was demanding enough that it was pretty depleted, that in the extra time that we have for personal growth, I needed to like it. And so fundamentally, everything that I'm talking about is a system of change that is designed for busy, hardworking people who have their priorities are straight, like work, putting food on the table, raising their family. That gets your best energy. It gets your first energy. You should be doing that. And it's understandable if you're exhausted at the end of it. And so the solutions I offer are comprehensive and fitting into that kind of a schedule. And if your life is not that challenging, then it's even easier. So everybody, it's not to exclude anyone who's not dealing with that. But if we can solve to that really busy, hardworking parent, you know, 10-hour day at the office, taking the kid to soccer, making dinner. If we can fit into that lifestyle, we can fit into most others.
You know, Rick, whether busy with actual busyness or those of us who might be inventing our busyness with being an hour or two or three in a day on social media or doing things that consume up our life that we might not be aware of, then these tools that they could like and do could support that too, right?
Absolutely. And that's a fantastic point. Some of the book starts that I'm writing now called Life OS, it focuses on physical concrete skills at the beginning, things like walking and a morning routine and yoga. But then later in the book, it gets to concepts of meditation, letting go of ego, clarity. And what a lot of people, when they talk about meditation, they'll say, you know, I just don't have 20 minutes to sit and do nothing. And what I find, once I discovered a meditation practice that worked for me, was that in that time, I can realize that I was wasting 2 hours a day scrolling social media. Mm. And that when I tell myself I'm busy, that's actually a story that is not based in reality. Mm. And when we seek truth through meditation, through the observation of our mind, there's all sorts of ways that time is created. And as you recall, creating time is a fundamental component of every strategy in the book. If it doesn't create time, it doesn't fit.
You know, actually, I know that you just moved from one part of the country to another part of the country, at least temporarily. And I asked you, how is it there? And you said, there is peaceful and a peaceful experience. And where you were is peaceful and a peaceful experience. Am I to get the feeling that potentially you can be in a peaceful experience almost anywhere you are? You'll find it or you'll create it?
So I would like to think so. But I think really I have very deliberately over the last 5 years designed my life to be in the direction of peaceful experiences. And so were something to get in the way of the life that I'm designing, the routines I'm setting up, the type of work I do, it would be easy to find myself not in a peaceful place, at which point I would really have to lean on the tools that I've been developing that have allowed me to get here. A very easy recent example was when the fires came through on January 7th through the Palisades. Mm. I mean, we could go into that, but that I was anything but peaceful for a long period of time. And it was very, very, very difficult. And it took a lot of conscious effort. And I failed, you know, by and large for the first weeks, month. But ultimately, I kind of was able to lean on these strategies to help me move forward. And so, no, I would love to say that I can always maintain a peaceful state. But when I experience it, it is more based on life design and then being consistent with routines.
You know, I read in a book, valleys are not failure. So if you were in a valley, maybe that wasn't a failure. And that valley
that.
Potentially
Bravo.
Was caused. That was caused. That was put upon you. So,
yes, yes.
Gosh, I didn't know. I should have guessed between Malibu, Palisades, sure. Well, and I like how you said how, like you've set yourself up, your life up in a certain way, and then the tools guide you. So we're going to get into some of those tools in a moment, but more about you and your life. While you were growing up, did you potentially, you saw the opportunity inside of yourself. Did you also see opportunity in people, or were you more focused on yourself, or thought that they were all doing better than you or something? What was your thought process then?
I think I have always believed in the potential of others, and I am very optimistic about people in the general sense, and believe that we can all improve, and that when somebody is behaving in a way that most people would think is inappropriate, maybe morally wrong even, I also believe that if I were to have experienced the set of circumstances that led them there, I might be making that same decision. And so with that understanding and knowing how much I've struggled to be happy day to day, to really look forward to life, you know, for most of my life, that was very difficult to really enjoy and love every day and to wake up excited. And I don't think I'm unique in that. If you talk to most people at length and get deep, most people say, yeah, like life is hard, life is heavy. And so in the last 3 years, I have successfully sustained a transition from, you know, feeling that life was very hard and heavy to now really enjoying a peaceful experience of life where I'm highly enthusiastic, love every, like I work about 16 hours a day, but it feels like play, all of it. And I love it. Like I, almost every day I cannot wait for. And that's a fundamentally different experience of life. And my purpose, my hope
for you,
is to help other people find a similar shift.
Good for you. And it's good to hear that. It's good to hear that. Actually, could you repeat that last part? We don't hear that enough.
Sure, sure. Yeah, no. I think it's good to model vulnerability, because in the social media, like if you look at my social media profile and they're doing like handstands and yoga and like all the stuff that like looks cool. But the truth, like the fundamental truth, and I think that this is not unique to me, is we have a very active ego in the false sense of self. When I look back, my ego has sabotaged me for most of my life. Once I learned to recognize my ego and then make a decision that's not based in it, things started getting way, 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 way better. And life, for the most part, if you said, do you look forward to most of your days? Do you wake up excited and enthusiastic for the day ahead? For most of my life, I would say, no, life feels hard. Life feels heavy. It might look like everything is great on the outside. This is my inner experience. And through all the tools that I spent so much time working and developing, I finally found a way to make the shift where that, to answer that question, yes, I do look forward to most of my days.
Good for you, and thank you. Well, you must look forward to the mornings, especially because you get up and you beat up the sun. Tell us about that.
Sure, sure. So this is one of the turning points in the personal growth journey. Was in 2019, I was working these long, you know, let's say 50, 60 hours a week, real estate investment, and then a separate business that I was a passive investor in, but had a personal guarantee. In that business, the monthly reporting was going in the wrong direction, and it continued and continued until the point that I felt like, well, if I don't step in, like nothing else is, it's not working, you know, something needs to change. And so I went to take that on, but I just didn't have the time. I didn't have the energy. And it was one of those really, like one of the hardest times of my life. And we talked, like earlier, we were talking about the obstacle is the way, the valley is the opportunity. And this is one of those stories. What happened was, I've always thought that I wasn't a morning person. The snooze button, 7:15 is really early for me. Like going to school was a major drag in the morning. And I tried the routines, get up at 5:30, go to the gym. That never, and almost nobody sustains that routine for years. And what I found was this routine that removes all of the friction from the process of morning routine and quickly gets you access to all of the rewards. So what's it look like? Let's say the sun is rising at 6 a.m. because the time you get up changes. This is based on the greatest force in existence, the universe, the Earth's orbit around the sun. And so if the sun is up at 6 a.m., you get up around 5:40. You set the alarm the night before. When the alarm goes off, if you want to hit a snooze once, it's fine. But what you're going to do is just roll out of bed like groggy. There's no jolt. There's no jump like, let's go. And you just slip on a hoodie. You slip on shoes. Literally, like, I stumble out the door. So there's almost no effort. I put earbuds in. It's dark. Start playing music. And you walk. And you just walk slowly. And two blocks in, what starts to happen is just that movement increases circulation. Blood flow increases to the brain. This improves cognition. That starts doing the waking up for you as opposed to discipline or willpower. The music is enjoyable. And then 10 minutes in, the sky starts to change from black to these beautiful like purples and oranges as it goes just from like pitch black to, and then those purples and oranges become a little redder, a little bluer. Sometimes it's like a cotton candy sky. And then the sun rises, and while sunsets are beautiful, like I love the sunset, they're cooling. You're going from day to night. They're winding down. The sunrise is energizing. It's like this gentle catapult. And so that starts coming in, and you're now, like evolutionarily, we could go into this. We are fundamentally wired to be morning people. It wasn't until Edison invented the light bulb that we could override our internal wiring. And so once you get in harmony with that wiring, you get in harmony with the universe, like what's more real than the Earth's orbit, so many other things start to fall in place. And my career grew tremendously. My ability as a manager, like I got so clear by 6:30 a.m., I started sending off very concise, effective emails to my team. So my original like work experience for a long time was, you know, office at 8:30, inbox is full, put out fires. You're focusing on what's urgent, not what's important. Maybe by 11 or 12, you're finally getting to do some of the critical thinking for bigger picture tasks. Well, not anymore. Like when I'm sending out these emails at 6:30, everyone started marching to my beat. I'm now setting the tempo. I'm solving the day's problems, doing that 11, 12 a.m. work at 6:30 with a fresh mind, a clear mind, an energetic state. So the solutions just were coming quickly and easily. And so my level of productivity, it wasn't like a 20% or like a, it was like a 200 to 300% increase in a week or two of this, which gave me the time to manage the other business, to improve at the job that I was doing, and fundamentally shift myself in a direction of a financial freedom journey that has then allowed me to design a life that is mostly peaceful.
I like it. For a moment there, I thought you were going to say you roll out of bed and you turn on your phone and you check your social media to see who's written.
Right.
So it sounds like a very, this is a tool, right? This is one of your tools.
This is a tool, very powerful.
It sounds like something that one can get into and like. You obviously like it just from how you described it, and it's meaningful to you and helpful, obviously. And so it goes along with what you were saying, something that you like. And it also takes me back to that question about did you see opportunity in people or possibility in them? And so you've taken something that is hard for people and you've made it easier. And that's something that you seem to have done with other processes. Could we talk maybe about another one?
Sure. So one of my favorites is walking. I love to walk. I currently walk about 14,000 steps a day on average. And in 2017, I was walking 4,000 steps a day. That's pretty normal for most people. And so I got interested in walking and slowly started finding ways that walking could fit in my life where it didn't take time. I do not say, okay, I'm going to go quote unquote work out in this hour and what I'm doing is walking. All of the walking I do is happening in the context of everything else that happens in my life, and it makes it all better. And so, a lot of people I'll coach on walking, and what people's first impulse is very common. If I'm walking 4,000 steps, five, however many steps you're walking, is okay, I want to go walk 10,000 steps a day. That's my goal. 10,000 steps a day seems reasonable. What happens is busy, hardworking people, life happens. You get to 8:30 one day and you're at 4,000 steps, and do you really have the energy to go walk 6,000? You don't. And so you feel like you failed. You didn't hit your goal that day. And you get back on the horse the next day, two, three, then life happens again. And life happens enough that we experience failure with this 10,000 steps a day goal. And that failure weighs very heavily because it's not just like at 8:30 that you feel it. When it's 2 p.m., you know that you haven't gotten them in and you know your day's busy and you're wondering when you're going to. And at 4 and at 6, and the guilt and the shame maybe is even on the subconscious level, but it weighs over time and we don't want to quit. We don't want to quit. We want to be committed. One of the, like, here's a really beautiful example. One word. If instead of 10,000 steps per day, you say an average of 10,000 steps per day, you can miss 10,000 steps all the time. You can literally miss 10,000 steps more than half of the days of the year and still average 10,000 steps a day. And this little change is just a simple word adjustment that much of what I teach and write about, it's not adding a bunch of force and effort. It's not throwing a lot of metal at an engineering solution. It's what the Taoists call wu wei, the minimally required effort. And it's this beautiful little dance with life where we just accept the simplicity of certain things to create alignment. And this is just one of those examples where a strategic walking pattern that I teach people how to fit into their life can be the most beautiful complement that increases productivity, makes you feel healthy every day, guarantees your 10,000 steps without having to carve out an hour. And that simplification creates a way that you can do it so you like it. And so we're not doing it out of discipline and willpower. And when we do our changes because we like and look forward to them, we're a lot more likely to keep doing them. And that's what we want.
Rick, I know you lead yoga or teach yoga, however you say it. D Does this come up in yoga, and has one fed the other?
So these specific relationships maybe loosely come up in a yoga class, but not so much. The relationship between yoga and everything else is massive. Yoga is an unbelievable force multiplier for productivity. And so that's everything I do. I'm focused on productivity, because if I can be more productive, I can create more value. If I can create more value, I can generate more income, which allows me to get financially free, not for the purpose of finance or getting rich, but for the purpose of freedom, because freedom is where we find peace and enthusiasm and joy. And yoga is at the heart of all of, I'd be more than happy to give specific examples, but the short answer to your question is absolutely.
A specific example would be great.
Okay, so I'm 33. I have back pain, gut issues, brain fog, all this stuff. It's like, wait, I thought, is this just what it means to be in your 30s and not 29 anymore? And I thought yoga was weird. I did not like it. I thought it was soft. And my girlfriend eventually got me into a yoga pose, and it really felt good. And what I noticed immediately was I felt it healing me. And so I was curious, okay, I want to get another pose. And that one, and minor things that we're talking about, little back soreness, little hip soreness that escalates if we don't manage it, but it gives us the ability to manage it. And so it's like I started to tune myself through these different yoga poses. And when I was completely sold 2 years into it, I was playing a lot of golf. And so I'd hit a bucket of 80 balls and my back would be very sore at the end of it and I'd stop. And one day I was messing around with these two yoga poses, Warrior 3.5 Moon. And I did them for about 3 minutes after hitting the bucket of balls, and my back felt fantastic. I was like, really? I didn't believe it. So I got another bucket and hit them all and felt fine. So I was like, well, is that replicable? And it turned out it was highly replicable. And so my golf game went crazy. I started playing the best golf of my life because I could just practice more and feel better. What that means in work is that we know what it's like to show up clear and feeling great and how productive we can be. And we know that when we don't feel well, back pain, shoulder, whatever it might be, it really drags on our ability to be productive. We still show up with the same effort, but there's this headwind that we're working toward. Well, if we can manage soreness, pain, tightness, and instead saturate our body with synovial fluids, so our joints are lubricated and properly nourished, saturate our brain with GABA, yoga can do this in 3 minutes. We don't have to do an hour class. And that makes you feel fantastic and clear. And in that state, the level of productivity skyrockets. And that is really, really exciting to experience. Everyone can experience it.
We have a yoga morning routine video that you have up on YouTube, and we've shared that on our Life Changes show page for Rick Sugarman, spelled just like it sounds. And beatupthesun.com is a great place to start. And we also have links to the books. So let's talk about the books real quick.
Sure.
Yeah. So they're children's books, but they're for everybody and more for everybody, I think, right?
So really, they're written for adults. End of story. I wrote the book for adults. I used a children's book format as a creative strategy to force myself into a concise writing format. Because I was, so many books you read, it's like a 300-page book, and you could have written this in 80 pages. They're either beating a dead horse or, they're just kind of running over the same territory. It's very frustrating. So I wanted to go in the exact opposite direction. How can I get something that is so concise that a single, hardworking mother raising two kids, working two jobs at 8:30 p.m. is exhausted? How can I get her a message in a way that she can benefit from it and can have her life experience improve? And the children's book format forced me to be concise so that she can read it in 15 minutes. And the illustrations, one, support the message visually, but two, there's a softness to it and the intensity goes down. I don't feel like I'm reading a self-help book so much as I feel like I'm reading a children's book, but I'm getting a message that improves my experience of life.
Clever. So I mentioned sustaining change through valleys. And then I also alluded to sustaining change, goal achievement for the rest of us?
Yes. Yes. So, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. I know where you're going, I think.
So sustaining change, the one you just mentioned, goal achievement for the rest of us, not superheroes. Superheroes is crossed out. That's the first book. And the basic idea is that superheroes are the people that like can do the gym routine and can get up at 5:30 every day, do the gym, go to work all day, come home, you know, soccer for the kids, dinner, and they can do that consistently. Most of us can't do that. And there's nothing wrong with that. But the ones who can do that are the ones who write the books. And so it makes sense that we would read their books. But most of us have used up our superhero by being great parents and being hardworking. Mm. And so change can be accomplished gracefully and with ease and with this wu-wei, this, you know, delicate, intentional fitting into a lifestyle as it is. And so when we approach change that way, the rest of us, the ones who aren't the superheroes, like if you've have the experience of quitting many goals, as I have, I've quit so many, and I was so tired and it's so deflating. And if you're looking for something different, it might be that you are learning from superheroes who maybe aren't working as hard in the areas of life that you are. Mm. And so there's a missing ingredient, and the missing ingredients are very effective and subtly easy and enjoyable and pleasant.
So learning how to embody sustainable change, we have certainly learned a couple tips and tricks from you at the how to make things fun and how to, we haven't gotten to this part yet, actually setting a goal that doesn't make us feel like a failure if we don't do it. Or actually, you were saying, what was the statistic you had about goals in general?
So yeah, 90% of goals don't last a year.
90%. Okay.
And it's really higher than that. The data is a little difficult to quantify, but 90% is a conservative estimate.
And so actually, before we bring this conversation to a close, unfortunately, you have a quick tip on that?
Absolutely. The goal is to get from the 90% to the 10% to sustain the change. The reason that we don't is because for the most part, we live in a quick fix culture. The quick fix is broken. It's just broken. The failure rate of the quick fix is 90%. Like that's an F minus. And so why doesn't the quick fix work? Because it only focuses generally on one thing and you go big and huge, maybe on the workout routine, but you don't have time for the personal finance and the lifelong learning and the clarity practices. And so then you go try to filter one of those in, but that wedges out this other thing. What we need is a system that recognizes all of the different things that we care about to have this effective, beautiful, enthusiastic, joyful life. And we need something that harmonizes them all. And so the book that I'm writing right now, Life OS, is very detailed in its approach to that. But my quick tip for someone right now, if you want to do something tomorrow, slow down. Get curious. There are so many more ways to make the change that you want than you might think about. And if you spend a little time getting curious and then trying all of these other things that you're brainstorming, when you find one that you like, stick with that one. Because when we remove discipline from consistency, it gets so much easier. And so that's what we're trying to do. Find stuff that we like by being curious, being a little bit more patient, and recognize the comprehensive, we want lots of improvements. And so we can't go so huge in one area that we don't have room to harmonize the others.
You've given so much in tips just in the sharing of your stories. And yet I'm reminded that you have so many other tips and calculators and protocols that people can learn from you at your website, beatupthesun.com. And could you just really quickly tell us about the yoga program, the financial freedom calculator, meditation protocol, etc.?
Yes. So the yoga program, it's free. There's 65 poses, 3 levels. 99% of people can do almost everything in level 1. You will start this program from a place of confidence. You will be going, wow, yoga's easy. And that's my goal, is 5 minutes, and I want you to feel both yoga healing you, and I want you to feel that yoga's easy. If that's not your experience, email me. I'll help you. Mm-hmm. So that's the yoga program. The financial freedom calculator, I'm I have a math major and was a teacher, and am aware of how intimidated people are around numbers. And so there are many financial freedom calculators out there, but they're pretty complicated. And so I fundamentally wrote a simplified one that is really more about conceptual understanding of strategic financial freedom planning. And I'm not talking about investments and mutual funds and CDs. I'm talking about day-to-day behavior that increases income, helps make saving easier and fun, that shifts mindset toward a belief in a financial future that is accessible to anybody, not just those who are already doing well. And so this calculator is a tool that is free for everyone to use, and I teach through. The third one is the meditation protocol. It took me 2 years of just brutal failure with meditation to finally find a system that works. And I can teach people in 2 weeks how to meditate in the way that I do. And it's fundamentally me once again trying to simplify what was very difficult for me to learn and try and get it in down to this bite-sized nugget that you can efficiently adopt into your lifestyle and enjoy the benefits from quickly.
I'm excited about this all, and also what else you're going to simplify for us. This is like life for, I don't want to say for dummies. I don't want to say dummies, but it, life.
For real people, hardworking.
Ah,
It's life for
nice.
hardworking people, life for busy people, life for good people, life for people who have their priorities straight. Like when I talk to people who are busy, hardworking, and doing all the right things, and they're not healthy though, they haven't stuck with an exercise regimen. I say, well, why do you think that is? And they go, I guess I'm just lazy. Or I guess I just don't have the willpower. And that is, it's heartbreaking because if you are a busy, hardworking person, you're the opposite of lazy. You're exactly like the opposite of lazy. You have discipline, you have willpower, and it is normal that you are exhausted at the end of the day. What we need is not a quick fix, single-minded, short-term solution. We need something a little slower, a little softer, a little more balanced that we can like and look forward to. And I guarantee you, all of these things can be done in ways that we like and look forward to because there's an intrinsic motivation structure behind all of them. And once you tap into it, it's really exciting.
Well, this is all really exciting, and it has felt like a teaser, and yet at the same time, so much information and so much more information to be had for people that go to beatupthesun.com or go to Amazon and find the books for Rick Sugarman, just like it sounds. Rick, it's a pleasure knowing you and to learn from you, and looking forward to so much more.
Thank you so much. Congratulations on episode 855. That's quite an accomplishment, and I really appreciate the opportunity to share with your audience.
It's been our pleasure. So, with a big thank you to Rick Sugarman, it's now time for our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is David, and my brother died a few days ago, and the loss is devastating. However, several times during the day, I feel like he is with me and is asking me to celebrate our time together instead of mourning him. Is it possible to communicate with and talk to the dead?
Dearest David, I am so sorry for your loss. Losing a beloved sibling is one of the deepest heartbreaks a person can experience. Feeling devastated in this kind of situation is completely normal. Many people I know who grieve describe exactly what you are experiencing, that sense of their loved one's presence, a feeling of being comforted, or even hearing an inner voice encouraging them. Whether this is seen as your brother's spirit reaching out, your heart and memory creating a connection, or both, it is very real to you. There are several traditions and beliefs that may answer your question in different ways. Spiritual perspectives, like those in many religions or spiritual practices, teach that our loved ones continue on after death, and sometimes they do communicate through dreams, synchronicities, sensations, or inner knowing. Psychological perspectives recognize that our minds and hearts stay so bonded to those we love that we often experience their presence. This can be a healing way the psyche helps us through grief. and I believe that your personal experience matters most. If you feel your brother urging you to celebrate your time together, that message itself can be a gift of comfort. I have experienced this kind of connection many times with the loss of my loved ones. Here are some things you might wish to do to open space for further communication. Quiet reflection or meditation. Sit in stillness and invite your brother's higher self in. Notice any feelings, images, or words that arise. Another effective choice is to do dream journaling. Many people feel their loved ones visit them in dreams. Writing these down can deepen the sense of connection. My favorite way is through talking out loud. You can share with him your thoughts, gratitude, or even your pain. Many find it surprisingly comforting. You might want to create a simple ritual that can help you connect with him. You could light a candle, play his favorite music, or cook a meal you enjoyed together as a way of celebrating your bond. After you set the stage for the conversation, you can open the connection by saying something like this: "Brother, I welcome your spirit here with me. I love you, and I am open to feeling your presence." You can speak to him as if he were sitting across from you. Share what's in your heart, your grief, your love, your favorite memories. Ask him questions if you want. And after speaking, sit in silence for a few minutes. Pay attention to sensations, thoughts, images, or feelings that arise. Sometimes answers come as a sudden warmth, a remembered phrase, or a quiet sense of peace. The last step is to thank him for being with you. You can then close the ritual by saying, "I carry you in my heart always. Until we meet again, be at peace." David, I trust that you will continue the bond by repeating this practice, especially on days when the grief feels heavy or when you want to celebrate your time together. I feel you will be successful in your efforts to connect with your beloved brother, and I look forward to you updating me once you have done any of my suggestions.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And now it's time for our performance guest segment, and we are delighted to have our performance guest, who's a singer, a songwriter, a recording artist, and also so much more, Essie Jane. Welcome, Essie, to the Life Changers Show.
Hi, good to meet you. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you here on the show, sharing your passion, and we're going to get to share your music in just a little bit. We're going to talk a little bit about your music, but interestingly enough, your music speaks so much, and everybody can interpret it in so many different ways, or they feel it in so many different ways. How do you speak about it yourself?
Oh, how do I speak about it? It has been a journey through all different parts of myself, all different parts of my life experience, all different parts of everybody who's touched my life, their experience. And over that period of time, I have just grown closer and closer and closer to my craft, whereby in a way, I can just be a vessel for what moves through, and I can catch it, and I can figure out what needs to be spoken and how it needs to be spoken. And the sounds I hear become instruments, and there's a lot of clarity with that over time about what can hold space well in a track, in a song. And finding this resonance and always remaining really focused on that resonance. And I think that that seems to be what has spoken to people, is there's some alignment that has happened in the person that the music has found, or they found the song, however you want to see it, this beautiful two-way street of things finding you when you need them. And witnessing those songs travel has really assured me, and the messages I've received and the people I talk to, that all that the resonance, like my life experience, has been a strong presence that has enabled somehow to for other people to dial in and feel that their life experience is matching the resonance of the music. So there's some alignment that happens between the listener and the piece. And I am certainly, after it's moved through me and I've channeled it through, it really leaves me. And so I really can genuinely at this point in my career be a witness. And that's really been a joy over the last few years, is just being this witness to the impact. It's just been very, very special, and it's very personal and to a lot of people, and covers a range of things from I had said about I have a lot of messages each day about death. It was very interesting actually to just hear the Ask Dorothy.
Right.
It's
That
yeah,
wasn't planned.
it's that is a strong daily practice for me, is talking to people about death and how the music has been used in that, either for the dying process or people who have already jumped. And then other more still the same impactful thing, but daily emails of people's sort of daily stories. So I had a Have a Lullaby album, one of the songs on that you'll play tonight, Oh, I Love You.
Yes.
And that has really crossed over from stories about families holding their children at night and singing and being cared for and holding space and feeling comforted with this mother energy, that also can translate the same energy to, say, a veteran who has severe PTSD, somebody who's suffered a really huge trauma. Sometimes it's an accident, it's a very physical process, and they are unraveling and healing from that. So it's a really wide spectrum of how the music has weaved its way into people's lives, and I get to communicate with those people every day of my life. It's pretty amazing.
I, of course, was familiar with your music before I knew I was familiar with your music. And then when I got acquainted to you and the music, I shared with you the first sense I got was this motherly energy, this motherly feeling, motherly love. And then as I started to tap into all the different ways that your music is used, from yoga to death and passing, birth and all that that you mentioned, people, mothers giving birth, and I thought, well, actually, the motherly energy works in all of those. Of course it does.
Yeah, it's the essence, it's the center of everything, I think. To harness it, if that's the correct word to use, I think so. Yeah, it feels like harnessing a kind of energy, and then you just soften, 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 and you just take your time and you care and you hold. And that's the thread through all of my work. And I feel at this point in time that I just have, that's just got a deeper embodiment for me, as I'm a mother myself to a little girl. She's 5. And then the mothering in my music, that all my worlds have collided with the mother. It's really, really been a special few years.
Well, at first I thought, since one of your pieces is called Opening and it's used in the opening of so many things, I thought we would open with that. But since we're talking so much about the mother, I think Oh, I Love You is what we should hear now.
Yeah.
And any more you want to share about that before we hear it?
Oh, this was just a piece that was, it was just utterly spontaneous. I just had this little kind of felt like taps on my shoulder when it came through. And it wasn't a story. Normally it's sort of like an unraveling of a story, but this was just a pure, like a mantra that just kind of landed. And it was just like, and I was just like, I love you. Oh, I love you. And it just fell and fell and traveled and traveled. And then I was like, that's it. And I worked on the piano, and I gave this piece to my husband on the guitar, and he played the first few notes of the guitar, and that was it. And then it just happened, and we were able to just sing it together, play it live. It literally it fell from the sky, and then I just peppered with little sprinkles of other vocals on top of it, and it was yeah, it was just a joy, really just a joy, that piece.
Well, we're going to get to experience that joy right here on the Life Changes Show. This is Essie Jane's version, or one of the renditions, pre-recorded, of Oh, I Love You. Essie Jane. Now, of course, essiejane.com is where you can learn more about Essie and her music. Essie, and Jane is Jain. You can find her on Instagram at Essie Jane Music, and she's on Spotify, I think on iTunes. You're all over.
All over, yes, all over the
All over for sure, and
land.
throughout the world. And thank you for that. Now, you mentioned your husband. I was thinking, isn't it great that we don't know certain things? Meeting your husband, I don't know how exactly how you met, but surely neither of you, correct me if I'm wrong, but we're thinking, oh, we're going to get together. We're going to make all this music because it can be heard throughout the land and help people in all these different situations. Were you?
No, No, we actually, our instruments met first. We were introduced by a mutual friend who was like, "Gosh, this guitarist, Essie, your voice, you guys have to meet." And so we did meet, and we played music together for some time until we realized that something else was going on. And so we were just like, "Okay, we're gonna do all of this together." And our story together, we didn't write it at all. We just, we were on some independent labels. We started experimenting together, like you do when you meet. You spend a few years juggling and working out who's who and who wants to do what and what do you want to do creative this year and do you want to do the same as me? But we were always lined up. It was really amazing, and we had such a sort of mind meld and an instrument meld where we can cue each other and feel each other before it happens. So when you're recording, it's such a trip. It really is. I don't even have adequate words to describe it, actually. It's really powerful. It's certainly bigger than both of us. And so we've always been able to dial in. And because of the digital age, and because our music was emerging and we were just exploring things and doing what we loved and playing, we came of age when CDs were just sort of crumbling out of existence and the digital age rose up. And for whatever reason it happened, we started witnessing. I was getting deeper and deeper into meditation and channeling, and Patrick had been doing a lot of classical guitar, but then he got into pedals and electrics, so he was kind of out there as well. And we were watching our work because it could now go everywhere and so fast. It can be anywhere in the world in seconds. It started leaving us behind and traveling out and gathering people. It was almost like it knew exactly where to go, who to go to, how to help. And each song had this energy. You could say they were person. I often describe it like it was our children leaving home. It felt very much like that. They're their own entities. They know what to do. They know themselves. They know where to go. Their songs. And it just started happening. And then I started getting emails from, there was a nurse at Sloan Kettering. I remember that being the first email, like, "I don't know how your music found me, but now we just found a way to play it to one of the patients here who was struggling, and something just happened, something clicked, they became peaceful, they started talking to their family." And from that email and that beginning, it just seems like it just went everywhere. It knew what to do.
It's interesting that you alluded to this in what you just said, and earlier when we were speaking, you said you are not a representative of the work, but you're happy to be an ambassador. And
Yeah.
I wow, could you explain that? I mean, you just did, but that's not how we hear artists. So how do you feel about that?
I've always felt that it was my path was maybe not the straight path of an artist. It wasn't, you play, you find a label, you get a record deal, you my life never really went those paths. And so I had to carve my own path. And really, I just centered on what I wanted to do and give to the world in the time I had here. And I just really focused in on that. I tried to just close all the windows to the business of music and just focus on what I was creating. And I think that switch definitely helped me center and make the body of work I needed to make. And so I feel really at peace with that because I really think that was my intention. I was creating this sense of comfort, and I just had a hunch it had something to do that was well beyond me. So it was very easy to let the work go and say, "Okay, oh, I love you. Go out." They don't have to be attached to me in any way. But I can represent them by being human with the humans I'm meeting every day and talking to and hearing the impact. And it's a total privilege to speak to people. It's very human and very raw, and it really is an honor. So
And this is a great time for your music to even pick up more and go. And I know you're writing more and creating or downloading or channeling, whatever it is you're doing, meditating. Is there something different that's coming through in this time or between COVID and now and going forward? Is it feel different to you?
The energy out there.
Well, yeah, again, we don't no, the channeling that's coming through or the music that's coming through, does it have a different quality, or it's just the pure love is always pure love?
I think it's the love is always the love. If I endeavor to stay in balance with that so that it doesn't, whatever's happening outside, it doesn't impact that direct force because you have to have peaceful forces. And if you're somebody who comes, lands on Earth, and you can be a peaceful force, and there's many methods to doing it, mine happen to be music and singing, then that's the priority. And you can be a peaceful force by any method. You can be a surgeon, any of those peaceful forces work. So I feel very aligned with my work and I keep it sacred and not, I try not to let the world interfere so I can do what I need to do.
Beautifully said. So before we hear your next piece, which is opening that we're going to get to share here on the Life Changes show, opening could be a lot of things. This moment, as we've described it, could be an opening for all the energies out there. How do you see this? Let me ask you, how was this piece coming through you? What did you think it was? What has it become? And where do you think it can go?
I think this piece was very clear. It was that piece that wherever you found yourself, if you're rushing around or you're struggling or things are swirling, that kind of energy where there's a sort of overwhelm, that this piece of music could just swoop you back in and hold you and keep you in that space. And I think that word a respite it from the world, and then somewhere in the middle of the piece, it just opens you up. So you're coming from feeling closed, constricted, complicated, those feelings, and then it expands and opens into the opening where your heart softens, and the wider picture of situations, of any issues, of things that are hurting you, you can widen the focus so you can begin a healing process. At the same time, it really roots you down. So I used a very old harmonium I had to just pull all the energy in, and then it's up to the person who receives it. They can transform with it. And that piece has remained the same. The feedback is very, very consistent about it, that they have almost to the letter my intention, which is really cool.
And I hope you still have the harmonium.
Oh yeah.
Okay. That
Oh
has
yeah.
remained the same. Okay, well, here it is. Here's Essie Jane's pre-recorded opening.
Thank you.
Thank you for letting us share that. Essie Jane. Find her, of course, at the Life Changes Show at ESSIEJAIN, but EssieJane.com. And also Essie Jane Music on the socials. She's on Spotify, iTunes. She's all over. And we're so grateful that you're here. And Essie, before you go, actually, speaking of being grateful that you're here, you said something about this city of ours. We're in Los Angeles, of course, and you are too. And you came here and you said something that, like Rick, said something that we don't hear often enough. What were you saying about coming to Los Angeles, if you don't mind?
It was just, it's so expansive, and we are raising our daughter here, and our daughter just has the most beautiful life with the sun. She knows nothing different than this beautiful magic here, and she's held in so much energy, and we have so many dear friends here. It is such a special creative place. It just widened us. It widened our hearts. It nourishes us. It's the most beautiful, beautiful, beautiful city. It has wonderful people. I'm the same, waking up every day to that sun in California and staring at it and just thinking, wow, this is, yeah. It's good vibes.
Good vibes indeed. Essie, thank you for bringing your good vibes to the Life Changes Show here tonight. What a pleasure.
Thank you for having me. So lovely to meet everybody. Thank you.
And looking forward to good vibes in person someday soon. In the meantime, with pleasure, with a big thank you to Essie Jane, our interview guest, and another big thank you to Rick Sugarman, our interview guest, or Essie Jane, our performance guest, Rick Sugarman, our interview guest. I'm blown away. I had such a great time. I feel like I've learned so much, and my heart is so open. And so with that, I am Filippo Voltaggio on behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host Mark Lejeune, and our whole family here at the Life Changes Show, reminding you that as our life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.